Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we are pulling back the curtains, literally, on theater. Not just dusty old plays, but theater as this like fundamental cultural force. We're diving into the ideas of Marvin Carlson.
Yeah, it's a really insightful journey. Our mission really is to shift perspective. Stop seeing theater as just, you know, scripts on a shelf.
Right.
Carlson wants us to see it as this living, breathing thing, a dynamic system of communication that, well, it reflects society, but also shapes it.
And it's so relevant because this way of thinking, it applies way beyond the stage, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Political rallies, business presentations, even courtroom dramas.
Mm-hmm.
Carlson gives you the tools to sort of decode all these live performances. You become a much sharper observer, a more informed participant in, well, everything.
It's like learning the grammar of how things happen in public.
Exactly. Understanding the mechanics, the signs, how meaning is being made or even manipulated.
Okay, so let's unpack the person behind these ideas. Marvin Carlson, Sidney Ekon, distinguished professor, hugely influential, written loads of key texts like Theories of the Theater. What's the core thing that makes his viewpoint so, well, distinct?
I think it's how he blends history and theory. He doesn't just list facts. He applies critical frameworks, particularly theater semiotics, basically, studying the signs and symbols in performance.
Like reading the language of the stage.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And also reception theory. That's crucial because it shifts the focus. It's not just about the writer or director. It's about how the audience creates meaning.
Okay, so the costume, the lighting, the way an actor pauses, they're all like words in a sentence that the audience reads.
You got it. Which leads us straight to his big idea. Theater is this complex, dynamic, multi-layered system of communication. He calls it a semiotic machine.
A semiotic machine. Wow. So not just entertainment. It's a cultural tool for making sense of things.
Exactly. And he asks, how do all these bits, the script, the actor, the space, the audience, even the specific night, how do they all interact right there in the moment to create meaning?
And it worked both ways, mirroring us, but also changing us.
That's the duality. It shows us who we are, our experiences, our values, but it can also be a catalyst, you know, push us to think differently, to imagine alternatives. It's this intricate web.
Okay, that sets us up perfectly. Let's dive into the components of this machine. And we really have to start with the audience, right?
Mm-hmm.
Carlson calls them the co-creator. That feels radical. We usually think of ourselves as just watching passively.
Right. But Carlson just dismantles that idea. He says, look, without an audience interpreting, it's basically just a rehearsal. The actual meaning of that specific performance, it's generated right there in that dynamic exchange between the stage and the seats.
He actually calls the audience the final and indispensable author.
He does, which is a huge statement.
But hang on, if the audience is the author, what happens to the playwright? Doesn't that diminish the script?
Ah, well, that's where his concept of the horizon of expectations comes in. It's quite brilliant, actually.
Okay, explain that.
He's saying you don't just walk into a theater empty-headed. You bring your own stuff, your culture, your politics, your personal history, what you think theater should be.
All your assumptions and biases.
Exactly. That's your horizon. And that horizon shapes how you interpret what you see. Think about watching, say, Hamlet today versus someone watching it 400 years ago. Your horizon is totally different. You'll read things into it about power, gender, psychology that the original audience just wouldn't have seen in the same way.
So the meaning isn't fixed in the text. It's constantly being renegotiated depending on who's watching and when.
Precisely. That interaction, the performance bumping against the audience's shifting horizon, that's the engine driving the whole meaning-making process.
Okay, that makes sense. So if the audience has that much power, what about the actual script, the written words? If Hamlet can mean so many things, what's the point of Shakespeare's text?
Well, Carlson's clear. The written text isn't the ultimate thing. It's more like a blueprint or a score.
Like sheet music.
Exactly like sheet music. The notes are there, fixed on the page. But how a musician or an orchestra interprets it, the tempo, the dynamic, the feeling, that creates a unique performance every single time.
So the script provides the structure, the instructions.
But the performance is the actual act of building something new from those instructions. Each production is its own work of art, not just, you know, illustrating the book.
Right. It elevates the live event itself. Okay, so moving from the blueprint to the person actually doing the building, the performer, Carlson digs into that weird paradox, doesn't he?
Yeah.
How can someone be themselves standing there, but also be somebody else, a character.
Yeah, it's the core magic trick of acting, isn't it? We know it's pretend, but we want it to feel real.
So how does he explain that?
He looks at the two main traditions. There's the sort of external, technical way, think Diderot, where the actor uses skill, craft, calculation to show the emotion. They might not feel it, but they make us believe it.
Cure technique.
Right. Then there's the internal psychological approach. Stanislavski is the big name here, where the actor tries to genuinely connect the character to their own emotional memories, to find the authentic feeling inside themselves.
But whichever method they use, the main tool is still the actor's body, right? Carlson calls it the instrument in the message.
Absolutely. It's not just words. It's posture, gesture, breath, a tiny flicker in the eyes. All these nonverbal signs are constantly communicating meaning.
Which brings us to where all this happens, the theatrical space. Carlson insists it's not just a neutral box. It actively shapes the meaning.
Oh, definitely. History shows this so clearly. Think about those ancient Greek amphitheaters, open air, everyone together under the same sun. It fostered a sense of civic community, shared experience.
Very different from, say, a 19th century theater with the big proscenium arch.
Totally different. That frame creates a separation, like looking at a picture. It encourages a quieter, more observational, almost voyeuristic experience. It kind of mirrored the social structures of the time, that separation.
And then you get modern designers like Adolph Appia and Edward Gordon Craig, who just threw out realistic scenery.
Yeah, they started using light, shadow, abstract shapes. They argued the atmosphere created by the space itself was more powerful. The space became emotional.
So the key takeaway is that how the space is arranged literally dictates the relationship between performers and audience.
Exactly. Think about a lecture hall versus a small black box theater, or a stadium rock concert versus an intimate folk club. The space tells you how to behave, how to relate to the event. It sets the terms of engagement.
Okay, shifting gears slightly. How does Carlson tie all these elements, audience, text, performer, space, into theater's role as a social and, importantly, a political force?
This is where his analysis gets really potent. He emphasizes a few core messages. One is theater as both cultural mirror and agent of change. It shows us our society, holds up a mirror to our values, our flaws.
But it doesn't just reflect, right? It can actively push back.
Yes, that's the crucial part. It can challenge norms, question authority, imagine different ways of being. So it's conservative in preserving traditions, but also potentially radical in sparking change.
And his discussion of Bertolt Brecht in epic theater is central to this, isn't it?
Absolutely central. Brecht totally rejected the idea that theater should make you feel emotional identification with the characters. He didn't want you lost in the story.
He wanted you thinking, critiquing.
Exactly. He used what he called the alienation effect, the V effect, techniques designed to constantly remind the audience, hey, you're watching a play. This isn't real life.
How did he do that? Like, what techniques?
Oh, things like actors stepping out of character to directly address the audience, maybe citing statistics, or showing the stage lights and ropes, using songs that comment on the action rather than advancing it, anything to break the illusion.
So it forces you to keep an intellectual distance, to analyze the social forces at play instead of just getting swept away.
Precisely. It's anti-escapism. It's about engaging your brain to see the social mechanics behind the story.
And that political edge gets even sharper with people like Augusto Boal, right? The theater of the oppressed.
Oh, absolutely. Carlson looks at how Boal took theatrical techniques off the stage and into communities. He used theater games and exercises to help marginalized groups analyze their own situations and actually rehearse strategies for social change.
So theater becomes a tool for empowerment, a laboratory for activism.
Exactly. It moves from representation to direct intervention. The line between art and political action becomes really blurry in a powerful way.
It's an incredible range of ideas. Let's try and boil some of it down. Are there a few key quotes or core statements from Carlson that really capture the essence?
Yeah, there's some lines that just nail the paradox and power of theater. One is, theater is the most ephemeral of arts, and yet it is the most enduring.
Ah, that captures it perfectly. The performance disappears the moment it ends.
But the human need for that live, shared experience, that goes on forever. It keeps coming back.
Makes sense. What else?
Another one. Every theatrical performance is both an imitation of life and a meditation upon it. It's not just copying reality.
Right. It's selecting, shaping, commenting.
Yeah. It filters reality through artistic choices, forcing us to look again, to think about what we're seeing.
And the big one about its overall significance.
This one's pretty sweeping. The history of theater is the history of human consciousness exploring itself through collective imagination.
Wow. So he's basically saying theater is fundamental to how we understand ourselves as humans.
That's the claim. Studying theater isn't niche. It's studying a core aspect of human culture and self-awareness.
Okay, so for someone listening, maybe not a regular theater goer, how can they take these big ideas and apply them? What are the real-life applications?
Well, the most direct one is starting to recognize performativity in daily life. Use Carlson's lens to analyze everyday situations that aren't theater but are definitely performances. Think about a job interview, or a first date, or even just a family dinner sometimes. Ask yourself, who are the actors? What's the unspoken script? What are the costumes, the clothes communicating? What's the set design, the environment doing?
And the use of space. Who sits where at the meeting table? Who stands, who sits?
Absolutely. That's proxemics, the study of space and communication. It's pure Carlson. Understanding how space signals power, intimacy, formality. It's a really practical tool for reading situations.
It's really useful. Who else?
Secondly, it massively boosts your critical thinking and media literacy. Carlson's semiotic approach reading signs trains you to look at things, not just through them.
So when you watch the news or an ad,
you start asking, why that camera angle? What message is the background music sending? What assumptions are embedded in this image? You become much more aware of how meaning is constructed and sometimes how you're being persuaded.
You're less likely to just passively consume messages.
Exactly. You start decoding the world around you.
When you were putting all this together, synthesizing Carlson's work, what was the biggest surprise for you or the most striking takeaway?
I think it was the sheer bold scope of his argument. That understanding theater isn't just for theater nerds, you know? He really positions it as essential for understanding human culture, politics, social interaction itself. It's not just entertainment. It's presented as this vital, ongoing human technology for understanding and shaping our world. That ambition was really striking.
Yeah, I agree. For me, the big thing is that paradigm shift he forces. Moving away from just thinking about plays as literature you read to understanding performance as this living, breathing event where meaning is made right now between the stage and the seats.
And the audience is central.
Absolutely. The challenge Carlson leaves us with, I think, is to be more conscious participants. The next time you're in any kind of live communal event, could be a concert, a wedding, a town hall meeting, remember his ideas. Recognize you're not just a spectator. You're part of the circuit. You're actively co-creating the meaning of that shared moment.
Go out and read the performance of everyday life.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.